This netcast is brought to you by the 8 Days of Geek Network.
All of your ears are belong to us.
On this episode of Error Code 8, we talk about Google Drive shenanigans, all of our online storage space, ion crystals of justice, crab computers, and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. And welcome back to another episode, slightly belated, of Error Code 8. I'm your host, Jesse Miller, and joining me, as always, is Sam Briggs.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Yes, we missed you guys last week, but it's because a mixture of Sam being busy and me being at CES and having to catch up from all of that. I'll talk about that later in the show. It's actually the last item I want to hit. But for right now, we've got 2 weeks worth of news to catch up on. Now, we're going to try and run through this as quick as possible so we don't run too much longer than our normal episode time, so bear with us. First thing I want to hit, a few of these are really, really small. They don't even need to be discussed, really, but I want to hit them just to get them out there. First thing, Galaxy Nexus was originally on Verizon. Sprint has released their LTE version of the Galaxy Nexus available now. Originally, the story was, hey, it's coming. Now it's actually released. So go out there, get it. It's $200, I believe, on contract. Very nice phone. It might be my next phone. Who knows? All right, next thing. This is, I'm going, and my apologies, Sam. I'm actually slightly going out of order on this. But you'll...
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, oh, mo. I threw these notes together pretty quick. Next thing. Apple has announced that WWDC is now scheduled for June 11th. So, you know, basically, a WWDC was always a really important conference because it was the conference where they always announced a new iPhone. They announced an iPhone after WWDC now. So, we don't know what they're going to announce, what it's going to be, if it's going to be software. You know, you've got Mountain Lion out there waiting. So who knows? There might be some kind of news happening with Mountain Lion. There's been a couple betas going out to the developers, so maybe that'll be ready in a couple weeks. Well,
I also expect something with Apple TV again.
Yeah, it's possible. Are you talking about Apple TV as in the little box Apple TV or the Apple TV that everyone thinks Apple is going to make?
I'm hoping the one that everyone wants Apple to make.
See, I don't think they're going to do that. I'm probably going to be proven horribly, horribly wrong one day, and someone's going to point this out saying, hey, you were a jackass, you didn't think they were going to do it. But I seriously do not think Apple is going to do that. Because the turnaround on TVs is so massive, you know? I mean, you buy a TV, and in a couple of years, prices go down, you buy another one. So I think they would rather be the box that you buy to hook into all of your TVs than the one TV you buy, because you know it's an Apple product. It's going to be made out of uber aluminum or liquid metal that's going to reform to a different size each time you turn it on or something ridiculous, and it's going have a price tag to match. So you're not going to want to buy multiples.
If they were going to do something like that, I would expect them a year or two down the road, more than likely. I don't see them taking such a big risk just yet.
Exactly. Now, Tim Cook did say that there is going to be some very innovative products coming from Apple. But then again, you've also got to figure that Steve Jobs was he was extremely adamant about the four corners approach, that he has four very specific product groups and you focus on only those four. So if you think about it, you've got, what is it? It's phones, portable devices, tablets, PCs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there you go. That covers pretty much everyone. If you don't want a Mac, you get an iPad. If you don't want an iPad, you get an iPhone. If you don't want an iPhone, you get an iPod. So I don't know. I mean, it's weird that so soon after Steve passing away that they would break that stigma. But who knows?
That's true.
Who knows? It's possible. You never know. Steve could have left that, because I was one of the people who said that I think Steve Jobs left, like, at least 5 years' worth of plans in the works for Apple so that they would have a direction after he was gone.
I believe it.
Yeah. So, people were asking me, how do you think Tim Cook's going to do as CEO? I told them, Tim Cook is in control, and by definition, he's a CEO. But to me, we're not going to see Tim Cook for another 5 years. We're just going to see Tim Cook reading off of Steve Jobs' cue cards. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting either way. Mm-hmm. All right. Big thing that happened in Google news, Google Drive came out. There was mumblings and grumblings about something happening with a Google Cloud storage program. Everyone seemed to forget the fact that Google Docs is a cloud storage program. At its heart, that's what it is. And it just has document editing batched up on top of it. Well, Google Docs turns into Google Drive. You get 5 gigabytes of online storage for pretty much whatever you want. The maximum file size, get this, this is outrageous. Maximum file size is 10 gigabytes. That's intense. One file can be 10 gigabytes when you upload it.
And it definitely shows in regards to compared to the competition, which the closest anyone comes to that is Microsoft SkyDrive at 2 gigabytes. Mm-hmm. You can tell Google cares much less about piracy than Microsoft and Apple, who have always been very adamant on being against it. The fact is 10 gigs, I mean, that's a lot of information that you can post up and share relatively easily.
Yeah, and see, when it's I've got a little graph here that compares them. Engadget did a really great little infograph. And with Google Drive, your free storage amount is 5 gigabytes, which is on par with the 5 gigabytes you get from Apple's iCloud. Dropbox is 2 gigabytes with referral bonuses. Trust me, if you get a lot of people referring, you get some good stuff. I got 16 gigabytes of Dropbox for free because we use it on the website. So, you know, SkyDrive is 7 gigabytes right now. If you were an existing user who opted into the new program, you have 25 gigabytes. So, pricing on Google Drive. We won't go too in-depth with the rest of them because you can look those up online. But we'll go per year, annual cost. So Google Drive, 5 gigabytes free. Then you also can go for 25 gigabytes at $2.50 per month, 100 gigabytes for $5 a month, a terabyte for $50 a month, and the absolute maximum plan you can get is 16 terabytes for $800 a month.
What?
Yeah. Exactly.
How about you rent a? It's like this is more or less you're going to rent a server from us,
pretty much
for $800 a month.
Yeah, I could build a server with 16 terabytes for that price.
Yeah,
and just rent it out.
Yeah,
man, I just found my new business plan. See you guys.
No, posted through the website.
There you go.
What can we call this?
It's the 8 drive.
There you go. Perfect, Matt. Matches everybody else's, except for iCloud, who has to be different.
Well, of course, because they're Apple. All right, so your annual cost. Engadget has it broken down to 20 gigabytes, but not everyone applies to that one, because Dropbox's next step up from their free plan is 50 gigabytes. So your annual cost, you figure if you're going 20 gigabytes per month, is $30 a year. That's kind of pricey when you look at the fact that Microsoft SkyDrive is $10 a year for 20 gigabytes. That's iffy. iCloud, $40. Premium product, I guess, right? once again, like I said, Dropbox.
The servers are all really nice looking, and pay for that.
Yeah, they blow them out daily. like I said, Dropbox, the next step up they have is 50 gigabytes, which is $10 a month at $120 a year. So they're right up there in price too. The maximum file size, like I said, is the big kicker. 10 gigabytes per file. That's outrageous. SkyDrive has 2 gigabytes. Dropbox has 300 megabytes via the browser. Now, if you use the app on your desktop computer, it is unlimited. So that comes in handy. And then you've got Apple iCloud, which is 25 megabytes for free accounts and 250 megabytes for paying subscribers. Eh. You've got with Google Drive, just the little things that you have add to it. Your Google Plus and Google Docs integration, Google Search, they have an open SDK, obviously. You know, OCR technology, so you can upload files and have them basically upload a PDF and have it OCR it to where it recognizes the text and you can go in and edit it. You know, if you sign up for a paid account, also as an extra added bonus, they will expand your Gmail storage area to 25 gigabytes. So, you know, that's handy. Not really. I've never used that much. But speaking of Google storage,
flawless segue.
Yes. Planned that one right. Google has officially raised the Gmail storage limit for just any old user from their 7.5 gigabytes to 10. Woo! Now, the funny thing is they actually launched in 2004 with 1 gigabyte of storage, and now you get 10. So that shows you how cheap storage is now.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know what's funny, though? Here, let me get in my Gmail. You can't remember your password, so this is useless for you. Hey, anybody who's really good at hacking, why don't you recover Sam's password for him?
I will one day. I just want to do it. Like, I'm going to go on vacation to another state, and then I'm going to do it there. So that if for whatever reason Google decides to look into it, I've thrown them off. Oh, I don't want them wondering why a man was hacking his own email account.
Wow. All right, so I have the upgrade. I have 10 gigabytes of space, 6% full, which puts me at 682 megabytes. I've been a Gmail user for a long time, and I still only have under 700 megs. I've got less than a CD's worth of email. So, yeah, there's that. All right, so like I said, check your storage space. It went up. Yippee skippy. I don't know why you need that much, but if you do, you got it. Next on our list. So
I didn't know it, mm-hmm. but I have SkyDrive at the 25 gigabytes.
Congratulations. I think I do too.
I've never used it.
I think I do too. I might want to actually check that. I can't wait till you get to do a story so that I can check, see if I have SkyDrive. Anyway. So, Samsung has had an announcement in the works for a little while. We didn't know exactly what it was going to be, but it's the time of the year. Everyone assumes it's going to be a new cell phone. They have, however, announced for sure a new processor. And they've said that it will be, let's see, already in production. The Exynos 4 Quad is scheduled to be adopted first into Samsung's next Galaxy smartphone that will be officially be announced in May. Well, I think the announcement is scheduled, I believe, for May 3rd or 4th, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, come on, it's probably just the Galaxy S3. This processor sounds pretty amazing, though. Using different kinds of, they have high-K metal gate low-power technology. For those of you who know what that is, it's a 32-nanometer fabrication there process. So, you know, it's going to be small, use a little bit of power, not produce a lot of heat. 1.4 gigahertz quad-core processor. It's supposed to have twice the power, quad core over dual core, obviously, as its predecessor. It will have about 20% better battery efficiency. that is actually really good considering the Galaxy S2 had a really good battery efficiency, not to mention it had a huge freaking battery. So, you know, put that together and you've got a pretty decent little processor rocking there. So hopefully in May we'll find out what Samsung has up their sleeves.
Yep.
You sound like the little things off of Sesame Street. Hey, here's a great thing. I get to check my SkyDrive and forget about everything for a few moments while Sam tells us about Microsoft and their doing things that I don't like because I like to stay on old firmwares.
Okay. Well, unless you're Jesse, I have good news and bad news. And the good news is that there's no good news. So we quickly get through this. Microsoft is requiring that, as of now, the Zune-based marketplace is being switched off. What this means is that any Windows 7 or Windows Phone 7 users out there that haven't updated to Windows Phone 7.5 will no longer be able to install any apps from the marketplace or be able to search. So
that just sounded like it was appropriate for that.
Yeah, well, it is. Yes, Microsoft, pseudo evil, everything else like that. However, unlike many other software providers and operating system providers, all of their devices are actually capable of updating to 7.5. No one got left behind. I'm sure there are many many other users out there still staring at their old firmware on their devices that have no choice. Yes, it sucks because 7.5 does bring some problems that 7 didn't quite have, but it fixes a lot of problems. Overall, not that big of a deal because if you're still using a Windows phone with Windows Phone 7 on it, you must live in an area with no internet because Microsoft pushes their updates like crazy.
Yeah, the reason, I mean, the reason I'm not 100% okay with it, and, you know, I usually get the bestest of the best firmware as, you know, as fast as I can. But the one thing is, like, for instance, with iOS devices, I tend to hold back one version simply for jailbreaking purposes. And that's not such a problem with Android because I'm always rooted, and pretty much a day after something releases, you get, you know, rooted versions going right out on the web. But with iOS, I tend to hold back just a little bit. So having this forced on you is a little rough.
The thing is that jailbreaking on Windows Phone is very different than it is from iOS and Android.
And on a side note, SkyDrive. I only have 7 gigabytes because I haven't signed in to use it since I got it. But since I'm a loyal customer, I can go in and upgrade for a limited amount of time. So if you think you can, if you think for even a moment that you might have signed into SkyDrive ever, hop back in there, hit the upgrade button, and get 25 gigs of free.
Dun, dun, dun.
Upgrade now because it says it's limited. So I don't know how limited that is. So now I have 25. Awesome. Booyah.
Yeah. I don't even know how to check how much in Hotmail, how much I've used. Even in SkyDrive.
Yeah, I went to SkyDrive. So, I don't know. I have literally...
I keep leaving the email.
I have... No, I have nothing. Nothing in my SkyDrive.
I have nothing either. Totally empty.
I thought for a second I had a document. I think it's the getting started.
Well, I don't even have that. I deleted it. So...
That shows you how much I've used it. I love it. Cool. Awesome.
Yep.
Anyway.
I don't know what we will ever use that for.
I don't know. I got a box account with 50 gigabytes of free storage that I haven't used either.
Oh, true.
Because I signed up on Android when it first came out.
See, I got it on my my touchpad came with it, so same here.
Yeah. All right, so our next story, this one's also you. You brought in a lot of stories this time, which shows you that how much I was slacking after C2E2. It was kind of a rough week. I mean, in all honesty, the missing last week's podcast was completely my fault because I told you to record in the morning, and I slept in like an hour and a half late. I woke up, and I'm like, son of a gun. So that was my fault. And then we're late this week because Sam can't hold his Z's, and he falls asleep on his computer keyboard.
Hey, I've worked already. We're going into Friday, and I'm already in overtime.
Awesome. So, I'm always in overtime. You know what I'm always in?
True.
I'm always in ass mode. it's a way of life.
Yes. I would hope not, actually. Oh, come on. I really don't want anyone to consistently be in ass mode.
That's a Craig Ferguson thing. I thought being a Gaelic would understand.
Yep, I actually watched that. I've only actually seen maybe like 15 episodes because he's on when I'm supposed to be in bed.
Gotcha.
That, I don't own a TV.
Oh, well.
Yep.
So, tell me about more patent violations. Womp womp.
This one is actually settling. There's actually, I'll have another little tidbit after this. But Apple, the ITC, has determined that Apple is, in fact, violating Motorola's patent on Wi-Fi use on the iPhone.
What?
Yep. This is big enough that if a judge says, you know, gives it the go-ahead, they can prevent Apple from importing the iPhone. It won't come to that. But this is a big loss for Apple in regards to the lawsuit wars. I don't know what Motorola is asking for in damages. I don't know if it was simply a licensing deal, which is really, as of late, Motorola has really been aiming for those more because they don't need money anymore. They're owned by Google. So this section of Motorola that is actually pertaining to the claim, they're wanting licensing deals, long-term investment. Also, jumping, I don't have this one on the list, but
dang,
it's actually a flawless segue to a point.
We're going off freaking script here, people.
Yep. A court has also determined that Apple and Samsung need to settle via a licensing agreement. They are no longer, the courts are tired of dealing with them. And they better figure something out, otherwise it's more or less, it's closer to getting tossed than settled. So, in other words, these patent lawsuits, the government is getting tired of them fast. I actually expect most of them to be cleared up by the end of next year, and that this patent suit thing to be completely and totally settled, if not having the patent system overhauled in some way.
Well, I have always said that the patent system is inherently broken. And there's no easy way to fix it either.
There's
it's just plain broken.
Yeah. Well, the idea that anytime you come up with an idea, you can patent it as long as you've got proof of concept. That's great, except for the fact that there is a myriad of different ways of doing the exact same thing in the computer world. I mean, two devices can seem like they function the exact same way, and they really don't, under the hood. So, whether it's code or hardware or anything else like that, until everybody just decides to be happy and go open source and only do that, it's always going to be an issue. Thankfully, with open source, you never have to worry about it normally.
This is true. By the way, speaking of open source, and I'm not going to do a flawless segue because it's just a news bit.
True.
But the new version of Ubuntu, 12.04 LTS, is out, so you can get it. It's Precise a Pangolin. I don't even know what a pangolin is. There's a, what was it? It's a 12.10 was Quantal Quetzal, which sounds like somebody with a speech impediment trying to tell you something about a pretzel. But yeah, Quantal Quetzal. I believe, isn't the Quetzal a bird of some kind?
Yep, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Anyway, I always get a kick out of Ubuntu's names. So,
they're getting more ridiculous.
I know, but they're so great. I mean, yeah. They just get harder and harder every time.
Mm-hmm. Which I will be, actually, probably by the next time we podcast, I will probably be running Ubuntu as long as I can get Skype to work. It's supposed to work no problem, and something's not working. So,
you know, the last time I ran Ubuntu, I ran Skype, and it worked pretty okay for me. But
yeah,
you know, it does take a little finagling.
Yep.
You know, I just did the math, and I realized I have almost 100 gigabytes of online storage
that you're not paying for.
Yeah, that I'm not paying for. And Knowing me, and that's not including my Gmail. So,
yeah.
But knowing me, I'm using like 5 of that. Yeah. I don't use
I might be at half a gig.
I use Pogo Plug and store everything on my personal server. I got terabytes of storage there, you know? Anyway. All right, this next story is also yours. Man, you are knocking them out of the park, one after the other after the other. I'm banging. So you tell me about reflection-free glass. And yes. The first thing I think of is, how nice would that be to have on my iPad screen when I'm outside and all I see is my face on the glass? So tell me a little more about it.
Okay. Sadly, I seriously doubt you'll ever see this on your iPad because Apple didn't make it. But the scientists at MIT have glare and reflection-free glass now. It's not hardened. So we may not see this in cell phones anytime soon, but it eliminates glare, reflections, and is water repellent and super hydrophobic. More or less what they do is they take a photoresistant layer of glass and then etch it away into tiny little cones so that the top of that, the surface of that glass is not flat technically, but at a microscopic level. It actually is made up of tiny little cones. This allows 100% of the light to pass through, which will improve color quality in LCDs. But most importantly, with the evolution of organic screens and organic recharging screens, the solar rechargers, it will help their efficiency by tons. They'll be so much more efficient since 100% of the light will be hitting the solar level, the solar recharge panels, that it makes a self-recharging device, whether it's a cell phone or a GPS or anything like that, much more feasible. As of right now, they're claiming the glass can be mass-produced at reasonable cost, but what MIT in the past has considered reasonable, almost no one else in the world considers reasonable. So expect this really where other MIT technology comes up, and that's in sports cars, high-end devices
It's affordable in a government grant sort of way.
Exactly. Exactly. You're not going to see this in your Samsung phones or your Samsung tablets for a few years, to say at least.
Bummer, because I really wanted that iPad screen minus my face.
Oh, believe me. I don't ever go outside because the sun is a horrible, 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 horrible thing.
Sun is trying to kill me. I get really bad moon burn.
Yeah, actually, I have a sunroof, and I haven't opened it even at night. I'm afraid.
Oh, you know, I'm the kind of guy, I go outside, I go in the sun, I start to sparkle. No, it just kind of goes downhill.
That's a good thing. Oh, but maybe that's not necessarily.
You know, they actually, my nickname back in college was Old Disco Balls.
Ooh, that could be much more inappropriate than our listeners assume.
Read into it what you will. Anyway, okay, so Best Buy. I had to actually look this up when you mentioned it because I forgot what this was, which is probably why they're taking it offline.
Yep.
But tell me about Best Buy and Best Buy Connect.
All right, Best Buy Connect. For the three of you out there that might be using it, listening to this podcast, it's going away. Probably a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to hear. But what it is Best Buy wanted to launch their own internet service, thinking that they could make more profit off of it instead of going through somebody like AT&T or Verizon. So it's effectively just a laptop dongle, just like what everybody else sells. However, it's failed. And starting June 20th, they're going to start suspending it. They're not taking new signups or anything else like that. If you are a subscriber, they've got about 1,100 subscribers out there. So if you are a subscriber, what they're going to do is they're going to cancel your early termination fees for your contract and help you move over to a different internet provider that will serve you in your area. And you might even get a gift card if you recently signed up, you know, within the last 90 days or so, to help cover the cost of the hardware that you did pay for. Is anybody really going to be too upset about this? No.
About because if you look at their coverage, 11,000 people.
Yeah. The thing is, if you look at their coverage, I don't see, like, it's pathetic. Actually, I'm going to have to pull up that map again because I don't even remember. It's tiny little areas that are in major cities where you have 100,000 different, you know, companies to choose from that are going to be probably cheaper and more consistent than what Best Buy was offering. What's interesting is that the fact that they even tried it, and it's been around since 2010, so it had a good run, you know, almost 2 years. But it was the first time a corporation – I mean, Walmart didn't even try this. And it's something to me that Walmart would try one day. But they even decided to go through an outside company. That's where Smalltalk came from, or Smalltalk. Yeah. So.
Wow, these prices are a little ridiculous.
Yeah. What are they? I don't have it pulled up right
on
now.
On 3G prepaid mobile hotspot and USB modem, 3 gigabytes is $50 a month.
Ooh.
On, let's see, 3G, 4G, unlimited 4G is $45 a month. So if you're not in a 4G area, you're pretty much just, you're up a creek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everyone's in a 4G area. No wonder they're shutting this thing down. Good riddance.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, of course, it's also WiMAX.
Which is going the way of the dodo anyway.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good technology, epic fail on Sprint's part.
Kind of was. It works really well in, like, the one area I get it. But It's the one area I get it. So.
Yeah.
All right. Next. This one, again, Sam. This one sounded freaking awesome when you told me about it. Let me dramatize this name really fast. Ready? Ion Crystal. Right? Does that not sound fantastic? What kind of processor you got in your computer? Freaking Ion Crystal with hyper threading? What's hyper threading?
Yeah, this is the most it really does sound completely awesome. But it is an exercise in human wanting something awesome, but in reality, it's completely and totally useless to us.
It's, you know, I had one of these moments earlier, not to break subject, but I had one of these moments earlier today when I was walking through a grocery store and I found in the Monster Energy drink section, there's a new drink called Uber Monster, and it's in a glass bottle that looks like a beer bottle, but has a like silver dollar sized cap on the top and a big humongous neck. And it's literally got malted barley in it. So it's supposed to taste like beer, but it's an energy drink and it's non-alcoholic.
Interesting.
So just like this, I had to look at it and go, why does this exist? Simple question. Why does it exist?
Oh, I'm glad you just compared something that is beyond the average human's intelligence of ever comprehending with something that is aimed at people with sub-level human intelligence.
You like how I did that? The two different ends of the spectrum coming together to meet in one all-encompassing question. Why does this exist?
Yes.
Of course, my first thought to that was, I don't want to live on this planet anymore. But the existence part is was the second one.
Yes.
Anyway, so tell me about the ion crystal.
All right, the ion crystal, which is more or less just a tiny little crystal that, as they describe it, is made up of the particle at the center is 300 atoms suspended in space.
See, that just sounds cool.
Exactly. It's like, well, one, isn't everything arguably suspended in space? I mean, that's definitely just sounded like they were being very dramatic about it. You know, there's not really anything not suspended in space. The Earth is suspended in space, so I'm not really sure what they're aiming for there. But in regards to its potential, as a computer, it is equivalent to a classic computer to the 10 to the power of 80.
They don't even have a name for that number.
No.
No, there's no name. Well, no, because in the Googleplex, one with 100 zeros.
Oh, that's true.
So that would be a one with 100 zeros would be 10 to the 99, right?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a little smaller than a Googleplex. So it's a little less impressive now. But
yeah,
go ahead. You can keep going.
I can make it more impressive.
Ooh.
Okay. To get the equivalent computing power that this ion crystal is capable of giving us in regards to quantum physics and mechanics and equations.
It's 10 to the power of 100, sorry.
Okay. So it's this is 20 magnitudes smaller.
Oh, wait. What the hell? No. It's 10 to the 10th to the 100th power. I think my brain just started bleeding.
To the 10th to the 100th. So it's 10 to the 10th? No, that's not how that works. All right, well, for most of you wondering, I'm a college dropout. I've brought this up before.
Note to self, make sure you know what the hell you're talking about before you start talking about it.
This I knew was over my head.
Oh, no, no, I'm talking to myself.
Oh, yeah. About the 10 to the 10th to the 100th?
Yeah, to Google. You go ahead and you keep talking. I'm going to look up Googleplex.
Okay. Well, to have a computer, a classical computer, that could be equivalent in power to this, it would need to be the size of the known universe. That doesn't even make sense. I have no idea how they even determined that in regards to, I'm guessing, looping memory, since a computer's only real limitation is loops in regards to the processes. So this thing is actually so powerful and so beyond what humans are currently capable of doing that there's no way to actually fact check it. It could do a calculation, and we have absolutely no idea if that calculation is correct or incorrect, because we have no computer systems capable of determining it in a timely manner. In other words, awesome, but useless. Much like non-alcoholic beer-tasting energy drinks.
Okay. I'm going to follow that up with the fact that a Google, or it's not spelled how you think it's spelled, but a Google is a 1 followed by 100 zeros. Okay, that's the number I was thinking of, was a Google. A Googleplex is a 1 followed by a 10 to the power of 100.
Okay.
And Carl Sagan says in a PBS special about the universe that it's physically impossible to actually write out a Googleplex because there is not enough room in the known universe to do so.
Nice.
That seemed relevant.
Yeah. So,
thank you, fpx.de. It's the Googleplex page.
Why do we even need to know that number?
I don't know, but I thought it was cool. This is what happens when you, like, put, if you give me a week off, I get out of the groove and my brain just kind of splatters against the screen, and yeah. Not to mention, I'm doing that on my iPad, which I should probably turn that off, because that's distracting. Okay, anyway, we're actually most of the way through this episode, guys. Just hang with us, just chill.
Oh, yeah. Well, say, if you leave now, you're not going to hear about the thing that is even more awesome than the ion crystal.
Yeah, but you will, if you stick with us for just a few more seconds, and then cut out, hear about a computer with crabs.
Yes.
Sam.
Who doesn't love crabs?
Tell me about how your computer caught crabs.
All right, well.
Maybe not with a lot of detail, though.
Oh, well. I'm a little upset now. All right, well, maybe I'll write a blog post about it. Maybe on Twitter. People will be confused. All right. My computer caught crabs. That should be the name of a song. Somebody out there. We talked about the guy who did the calculator. Did we talk about it on the podcast last week?
Last time? I don't remember if we actually talked about it on the podcast, or if we... I know we talked about it afterwards.
Afterward, yep. Okay, so there's this guy out there who decided to make a scientific calculator in Minecraft. And it works. That guy spent probably the majority of his life doing it, even though that would be physically impossible. But we're talking about impossible numbers anyway. Well, this crab computer is somebody out there who also had way too much time on their hands, but sadly did not have a high-speed connection to download Minecraft and lose their life that way. So they instead decided to walk a beach. And on the beach, they saw crabs, soldier crabs. And what they realized was these soldier crabs reacted in a very chaotic manner as an individual, but as a swarm, a very consistent manner. So consistently that if you introduce a maze, similar to a logic gate in computing, and you force environmental factors on the swarm of crabs, such as a bird shadow flying over, you can actually compute information by moving these crabs around through a maze, much like information flows through a logic gate to determine very basic equations.
Okay, I'm really starting to think that putting those two stories in that exact order was a really great idea.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. First, the ion crystal is computing beyond anything a human can do. And the crab computer is, well, computing that any kindergartner could do, but done by crabs.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. It's just, you know, when I'm walking down the beach, the only thing I'm thinking about is I'm going to have sand in so many places. Maybe I'm just practical like that.
It could be worse than having crabs in your pants.
It could. They could be doing math problems. Oh, man. Okay. This one is, I guess, technically my story. You brought it in. I had already had it on the notes, and we looked it all up. So we're just going to run through this real quick. The internet is pretty much going to die on July 9th. So we'll see you guys later.
We will be hosting for $10 a month. We will be hosting our own internet.
Yeah. Just on the site.
Contact me or Jesse.
Yeah. Special introductory offer. The price will go up. So anyway,
that's after we move up from dial up. We're starting it off from dial up.
Yeah, everybody's going to be working off 133.3 connection. Yeah. We're going to have it's going to be old hacker style where we actually have to like tape the phone, rubber band the phone to the little receiver port. Anyway, so basically, there's a malware that has been activated on, or not activated, but has been on many different computers. And basically, it's called the DNS Changer. The people who have put this out have been caught. And what has happened is DNS Changer changes the DNS server address inside the computer that it infects. And instead reroutes the computer to sites owned by the people who put out the malware. For those of you who don't know, a DNS server is domain name service. Basically, it turns numbers like 208-67-222-222, you know, and 192.168, blah, 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 all the IP addresses of the web. Every website has its own IP. It turns it into www.google.com. So it's a really easy way of basically going from a touch-tone phone to a rotary phone. So DNS Changer has changed all these DNS settings on so many computers. And it's supposed to be somewhere, I think they said, in 4 million computers, and almost 500,000 of those are in the U.S. alone. Once this, you know, once it changes DNS, you're automatically rerouted through the bad guy's servers. The FBI, when they took down the bad guys, decided that they were going to, instead of shutting everyone off the internet, basically, they were going to sanitize and keep the servers running so that people could still access the internet. Because if your DNS servers change and the DNS server goes offline, you have no internet unless you can put in the IP address of everywhere you want to go. I don't even know Google's IP address, so I would be stuck. On July 9th, the FBI is going to be shutting those servers down. So anyone who has this malware and hasn't fixed it will be kicked off the internet, basically. You won't be able to access anything. So, you know, might want to get that checked out.
Now, for those of you who may be infected but don't realize it, and you try to log on that day and can't, there are no simple fixes for the most part.
First,
that you can do on
your
own.
Find a virgin. Second, you get the blood of a goat. Third, you get hair follicles from Bruce Campbell's neck. And then you restore Windows.
Get craps.
And, yeah. No, actually, you could probably just go in and there will be a fix. I haven't used Windows for so long. I don't remember exactly how to, if your DNS server settings are hard-coded, how you change them. But there's a fix, I guarantee it. And it doesn't involve Bruce Campbell's hair follicles either.
No. The issue is that for most of you, every solution that you would try is going to require the internet. So you better have a smartphone or a tablet that can connect to the internet, because chances are you won't know how to do it off the top of your head. And no, rolling back your Windows version to a previous backup is more than likely not going to take care of it, because of how long ago this virus probably infected your computer and you never knew it. So make sure you get yourself checked out. This is far worse than a crab computer.
Oh, man. Whew, you can tell it's like 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I've got to actually be up for work in 5 hours, and I've already been up for almost 24 hours.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling. All right, last story I'd like to hit. Some people ask me when I go to cons and when I report about anything, you know, what kind of gear I take with me. And some of the gear that I see at places. So I just wanted to hit on I'm going to cut this down to almost nothing. But some of the tech and some of the stuff I see at C2E2. Lots of HD camcorders. But, you know, for every one press person who has an HD camcorder on a big, humongous rig and, you know, portable mics and all this stuff, there are probably 20 people who are just using small HD like blog camcorders, you know, like a Kodak Play Touch or a Sony Bloggy or something like that to do all of their work. It's just as easy. And with, you know, you would be surprised at how many people you see just recording everything on an iPhone. I recorded an entire panel on an iPod and it sounds fantastic. Basically, the stuff I take with me are things like iPad, my phone, lots and lots of extra chargers. Because you will always need to charge something. You know, I take my Mac. You would be surprised at how few laptops you see at these conferences nowadays. Everybody has either got Brandon's favorite thing, pen and pencil, you know, then a little bitty notebook, or they've got an iPad. I saw a lot of really cool iPad cases, by the way. I really want some of those. So if you want to see some of the pictures and some of the coverage that we did for C2E2, go to the website, We have, I just posted new galleries of photos today because everybody likes photos. So, yeah. All those were taken, by the way, with a Nikon 5000, D5000. It is getting late because I'm starting to mix up my words. And, yeah, I tweeted during the entire event. All those tweets, most of those pictures came from my iPad. So that's interesting as well, because this was my first real kick into using the iPad as a production machine. Let me tell you, it holds its own. Number one, it is a fantastic production machine that is relatively easy to compose stuff on. Number two, battery life. Oh my goodness, battery life. I actually used it for 12 straight hours at C2E2, and I still got home, or got to the hotel, with 30% of my battery. I mean, even by the end of the night, when I finally plugged it in, I think I was at 25%. And it's the lowest I've had the iPad.
That is ridiculous.
I know. I've had it on for 2 straight days right now. I'm looking at a 55% battery. I play games. I watch movies. YouTube. I YouTubed all day today. Yeah. Awesome. So, for any more information, and like I said, that was a request that I got from an email, so I figured I'd give it a little shout out, you know. Now, for any more information about stuff that I carry with me, and Sam, I'd like you to do one of these too sooner or later, you can go to my profile page on the website and look for what's in my bag. And I have a picture of my satchel that I carry with me, which is a D20 bag of holding. And everything that I stuff in it, which is a lot. I need to update it, though, because the iPad is not on that page. So I'm going to have to go through and update, because I actually have a second satchel that I carry with me now. Because, you know, you can never have too many satchels.
Nope.
Indiana Jones carried a satchel.
So I'm trying to think of... Actually, I moved all of my gaming stuff, like my D&D, my dice, minis and everything, to tool bags. Because I'm a redneck, and I just happen to have a lot of those. And
a redneck, you know, with a kilt.
Redneck with a kilt that plays Dungeons & Dragons. It was a very strange
thing. You were made fun of in school, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Sam, tell the good people where they can find, follow, and stalk you.
You can find me 8 Days of Geek, Sam Briggs, at 8daysofgeek.com. You can find me Gmail, manatoo@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at @themanatooman. Facebook, sambriggs.com. Again, picture of the guy in the kilt on the Jeep. Sadly, I no longer have that Jeep. It now rests in a graveyard. This is a sad moment right there. Trying to think. You won't find me on the beach playing with crabs.
That's probably a good thing. However, you will find him flying around in the outer edges of the solar system collecting ion crystals.
I'm going to make a level on Minecraft now that is a dedication to ion crystals.
On his quantum bagpipes.
Of justice!
Yeah, of justice. Add of justice to anything and it sounds so much better.
I agree.
This is my Sharpie. Of justice. All right, for me, you can find me on Twitter.
This is my ion crystal of justice.
Just got 10 times cooler. Got a Googleplex cooler. Ooh, harkening back. Boom. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter. I'm @PenOfDoom. You can find me on email. That is jesse@8daysofgeek.com. Anything else you want to look for, just go to about.me/Jesse Miller, and I'm there, trust me. It's a big picture of me and how stressed out I get in front of my computer, which I probably need to retake because I got stickers at C2E2. Yeah, now my computer has an N7 logo, the cake is a lie, and Tony Stark's arc reactor over the Apple. So that's kind of cool.
Nice.
I know, right? So, guys, I'm sorry that we ran just a little long this time, but that's what you get. It's 2 action-packed episodes meshed together, shoved through our ion crystal computing system, fed to the crabs, and then and then stored on all of our cloud storage devices for your entertainment.
Yes.
That's just how
this
it works.
Is ridiculous.
And that's how cool. That's how cool we are. This episode has been full of just. I have one question.
Yes.
Why does this episode exist?
Possibly.
Oh, I don't care, Sam.
I didn't have anything anyway. I was actually about to yell for justice, but you ruined it.
And that was our theme song. Go ahead.
Of justice!